You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome in Rose City to Soccer Made in Portland. Ryan Clark here with Chris Reifer. Big news week for PTFC. Obviously, the big story of the week coming out of the Oregonian, myself and Jeff Manning reporting. The Timbers have dropped DiBella as their primary sponsor. Obviously, DiBella was the kit sponsor for the Timbers at the start of this season and made it one game before some issues came up that led to the Timbers making that decision to drop them. Those issues, as reported by Jeff and I, just a quick summary. The CEO of DiBella, Donnie McMillan Jr., was accused by a former executive of having multiple instances of sexual harassment or unwanted advances with employees at DiBella. The former executive brought this up in a separate lawsuit that had to do with his employment and his what he believed was a termination that wasn't fair and that he didn't get the money that the company had promised him. And so through that, a motion was filed to bring forward those documents that this former executive CFO, Greg Swartz, said will ultimately prove that Donnie McMillan had these issues of sexual harassment in the workplace, which included settlements. The Timbers found out about this on Tuesday because myself and Jeff reached out to the team and told them essentially what we were reporting on. And through that process, Heather Davis said that she met with Donnie McMillan. He denied all of the allegations. The lawyer for DiBella went farther and said this is just a money grab on the part of Swartz. But either way, the Timbers, you know, with the information they had, made the decision to drop DiBella, which is a big deal and a difficult decision to make for the Timbers, particularly because of the financial implications. Obviously, they invested a lot in this sponsorship and will lose a significant amount of money as a result. We'll play with blank jerseys on Saturday. So, Chris, just your impressions of how PTFC handled this situation, and then just your evaluation of the whole situation itself.
I think they did what needed to be done. This obviously is not the kind of thing. I mean, frankly, in light of the last few years, and in light of this new information that they received via you, great job, by the way, of like getting the plug-in right from the jump. The folks, the powers that be are going to be just delighted with that. But given that the news that they got through you and sort of their subsequent actions to look into it, they couldn't move forward with DiBella on the front of their jerseys. I mean, it's not like other relationships. You literally have that logo on your jersey. And unless there is at least some degree of alignment between sort of the reputation and values of the sponsor and what the team at least wants to be the reputation and values of the club, I mean, you can't really put that crest on your chest, right? Put that logo on your chest and play with it every week. So I think they did what they needed to do. I think it is a hard decision insofar as there's frankly a lot of money behind it at a time when it certainly looks like some of the other avenues of money are not as robust perhaps as they have been in the past. And so the Timbers have some real skin in the game here. But I think they did what they needed to do. They did it quickly. They did it promptly. And I think that puts them now in a position where they're in a better spot to make the best of this going forward. I hope they're ambitious about that. I hope they have some creativity about it. But, you know, I think they're now in a position where they can make the best of it. And, you know, I think there's some ideas that can go around it. Frankly, I hope they find a way to sort of plug it back into the community while they're now looking for a new shirt sponsor, because that's not something that they're going to find overnight, right? That's going to be something that's going to take some time to figure out how they want to do it, who it's going to be to sort out the deal and even to implement it. That's going to take a matter of, you know, several weeks or frankly, probably even several months. It might be all season, because these aren't just the kinds of deals that go forward. But I hope they sort of treat this loss as in some respects a blank slate in which they can now project their values, and they can sort of go out and make some community impact using this. And, you know, that may well put themselves in a position at the end of it where their brand is higher value than it was. You know, the thing about the DiBella deal, even sort of setting aside the most recent revelations, is that this is not a well-known sort of well-established company, right? It's a closely held entity. It's a residential contractor. And so it's not Alaska Airlines in terms of reputation and sophistication and all of those things. And sort of just state the obvious, the reason that they didn't have a higher profile jersey sponsor is because they didn't have a brand that higher profile jersey sponsors wanted to pay a lot of money to associate themselves with. And I think if the Timbers use these next several months to try to make some community impact with this, they might find themselves in a position where their brand is just more valuable than it was when they contracted with DiBella, and they might find more attractive partners, and they might find more attractive deals. And so, you know, if I were advising the club, I would say pull out all the stops, figure out a way to do this in which they can use this blank space, literally blank space, to on the front of their jerseys to benefit the community, to maybe rebuild some relationships that they have lost over the course of the last few years, and maybe even to sort of increase the value of their brand in the end. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, there are a lot of logistics and regulations and all that stuff that goes into this. So I'm not trying to say easy peasy, slap whatever right. logo you want on there and go forward. But I hope they, you know, when they run into barriers, I hope they try to fight through them and they try to do something like this, because I think that could end up being a net positive for the team.
Yeah, it's definitely an opportunity for the club to do that type of work and to go farther than what I think is obviously, you know, the right decision here, and something that, you know, Heather Davis and the Timbers deserve credit for doing the right thing in this situation. The layers of complication with this are obvious, right? That, you know, given that she leads business operations, it was somebody like Heather Davis and her team behind the scenes that helped broker this deal, right? They thought this was a good deal for the Timbers to make with DiBella, and they thought it was a good community partner, and they had a lot planned with DiBella in the community, in addition obviously to all the advertisements and logos all over the stadium, which Heather now says are going to be covered up on Saturday, including the logo on the front of the jersey. So, you know, it's tough that the Timbers were in a situation where they and their third party search firm that they hired to seek out a sponsor did not do enough due diligence to find out about this information. Now, whether that would be possible, yeah, given the layers of protection. Yeah, it's hard to say whether it's even possible for them to have done that level of due diligence, because this is a situation where, you know, if these settlements and situations exist within DiBella, they'd be very hard for any search firm to obtain without some level of legal recourse frankly didn't exist for anybody until this lawsuit happened.
All fairness to them, unless there is a lawsuit filed or something like that, these kinds of deals, unfortunately, are very often very private. right? And so, you know, in the, and we know right. that there were no lawsuits filed about these things because of reporting that you and Jeff did for the Oregonian. See, I can do it too. But we know there were no lawsuits filed about these things. And so, you know, when that's the case, and it happens frequently that there are deals struck before any lawsuit is filed, it can be very private. And frankly, if DiBella either is not forthcoming, or to put a, I guess, slightly darker potential spin on it, misleading about this kind of stuff, it can be very difficult, if not impossible, for, you know, a partner like the Timbers or even their search firm that they used to uncover something like this. And so, I think it's frankly hard to establish a hot take that they didn't do their due diligence, because I just don't think we know that and can say that fairly. That's it. That said, I mean, you know, I think if there is a lesson to draw when it comes to a sponsorship that is this high profile, when you have a company like DiBella that, you know, doesn't have like, you know, some of the more sophisticated corporate structures that, you know, a big company like Alaska Airlines would have, you're a little bit more exposed to things like this, right? Because Alaska Airlines, if the CEO goes out and does something crazy, they can fire them, right? They can part ways, and the sort of the taint from that individual's actions doesn't necessarily sort of stick with the partner. But when you have a closely held entity like DiBella, ain't nowhere where that taint can go, right? it's sort of just stuck, because, you know, it's Donnie McMillan's company. And if Donnie McMillan engages in misconduct, there's kind of nowhere where that can go. And so, you know, I mean, dealing with these kinds of companies in this kind of really high profile relationship carries with it some risk. And that's kind of the risk that the Timbers have borne the bad end of over the course of the last few days. But in terms of how they responded,
right, and they can't, you know,
I think they responded the way they needed to.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they did. And they can't afford, as I was going to say, to, you know, hem and haw about stuff like this anymore, given where the franchise is at and given the history of the last 2 years, right? I mean, there are several publicly documented cases of the Timbers organization previously having ownership over the Thorns as well, not doing the right thing in these situations, or going on a half measure and claiming it was the right thing. This was a full measure. This was something that, you know, they saw as standing up for values rather than for dollars, because for dollars' sake, it's very much a bad move. Yeah. It's something that is going to cost quite a bit of money and a lot of time. And frankly, I feel for the people that work over at the Timbers organization in the marketing department. Yeah, pouring out
for them. It is going to be an enormous amount of work.
Yeah. Yeah, digital people, social people. I mean, there's just so many different, it's a big company and there's a lot of people who are going to be affected and have to work long hours fixing these problems. I mean, there's jerseys with the DiBella logo on them all over retail stores around the country, right? So there's so many logistical challenges that come with this, and it's going to be a messy path forward for sure. But they, you know, they play Saturday against DC United. The jerseys are either going to be blank completely or have some sort of cover over them, maybe shades of Sam Obasanya's protest in Ted Lasso, where you got the black tape over the logo. Who knows what'll happen there? But no DiBella logos or advertisements in the stadium either. So that's where things stand with that. But on the soccer field on Saturday,
the vibes are better.
Lone game, yeah, the vibes are
overall,
much better.
The vibes are complicated. The lone on the soccer field are better.
They are, and it was the lone game for DiBella as the sponsor. They are 1-0-0 as the sponsor all time, despite obviously now being dropped. And it was a fun game. Like I had a chance to watch it in its entirety on Apple TV, and the Timbers pulled off a 4-1 win in their opener over Colorado, up 4-0 at halftime. Everything going right, playing with pace, with, you know, precise decision making, crisp passes. No DPs on the field for the Timbers, and they played a thoroughly impressive game. And, you know, if they can bottle up that first half, and try to maintain it through the course of the majority of their games going forward. This team does have a chance to be good. And once they get their horses back, people like Evander, who's been hurt, and Felipe Mora, who's been hurt, and then whoever this DP number nine is, whether it's Cabecita Rodriguez or somebody else, more reinforcements is only going to help that. It is one game. You don't want to overreact to one game, but I think that the things that were positive about that Timbers game were such that they could become trends going forward if they, you know, are able to maintain that level of play.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you've the overall vibe coming out of that game, of course, is very good. It was the Colorado Rapids, who frankly looked like a bit of a mess. I think they're gonna have a better test this next weekend against DC United. Still a game that I would expect the Timbers, if they are the team that they looked like they could be in the first half against Colorado, it's still a game that I would expect the Timbers to be able to win at home against DC United. But DCU, I think, is going to put up a bit more of a fight than Colorado did. Frankly, I think there are a lot of things about Colorado's performance that you would look at the amount of space that Eric Williamson in particular was able to find in central midfield. I mean, you're just not going to get that every week because teams are going to be better at closing that down. I think it's not a super good sign for Chris Armas's new team that they were allowing that much space in that part of the field. And I mean Williamson was ruthless, especially in that first half. He was phenomenal. I mean, maybe the best performance.
Yeah, that first goal that he had, that it was such a great moment. But also, you were about to say the performance that he had overall was phenomenal.
The spaces
as well.
He was finding, the speed with which he was playing from those spaces, the ability that he had to sort of move around to find the soft spots. There were too many of them. They were too easy to find, but he was finding them. And then the decisions he was making and the speed with which he was making those decisions from that spot in that first half was 10 out of 10. It was one of the best performances the Timbers have had from an attacking central midfielder in some years. And so, you know, I think that certainly is probably putting some thoughts into Phil Neville's head. And in some ways, maybe sort of shines a light on a problem that we've discussed before in terms of how they're going to get and how they're going to deploy both Evander and Eric Williamson at the same time. But just, you know, those are 10,000 foot problems. If we zoom into just that game, Williamson was phenomenal. And that really, I think, opened up a lot. You know, the other thing that I think is really exciting, and frankly, I think probably is chicken soup for Ned Grabovoy's soul, is Antony's performance. I had thought coming into the season and in the off season that the wing was a higher priority for a DP signing than the number nine spot, just because I think Felipe Mora, when healthy, which is a thing, but when healthy is, you know, and at least average, maybe even a little bit better MLS starter up top. And so I kind of thought that, you know, if they needed to focus on one place, it made more sense to do so on the wing and then bring in somebody maybe a little bit younger at the nine, who they would hope would sort of rise to the occasion by the end of the season or next season to be a starting level player and sort of make the upside play there. The caveat to that was always, but if Antony is really good, you don't want to do that. Right. And so, you know, the Timbers have obviously gone in a different direction. They're prioritizing a number nine in their DP search. And, you know, that left them with potential exposure on the wing. Right. If Antony struggled, maybe Dairon Asprilla, doesn't sort of regain his 2021 form where he was a regular and impactful starter, they could be thin on the wing if that was the case. I think that was certainly one of the things to watch in terms of how effective Antony was. Phil Neville obviously sung his praises before this game, and those praises were justified. I don't think he was overall as impactful as Eric Williamson was. If I had a man of the match, that's why I would go to Eric. But, I mean, scored two goals. Both of them were pretty darn good. Both of them were different. I'm not sure he's going to be winning lots of headers, but man, Keegan Rosenberry didn't have a good time. And that is a testament to Antony's play. So if that's the Antony that we're going to see, their decision to prioritize the nine at with that DP spot is going to look very, very smart and is going to be very, very smart. You know, obviously you referenced
it. And so is the decision just to get Antony in the first place.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
that's the obvious thing, but like, you know, to bring in a guy like that who, you know, he only played a little bit last year and he showed some flashes of quality, but it was a different beast out there. Like in that game, like I think that at one of the trainings last year, Merritt Paulson said that Antony was the fastest player that they've ever had. Now Merritt's a guy that's prone to a little bit of exaggeration on occasion. I don't know if people have experienced that before, but it has. And in this case, like it, you could make a pretty good argument based on some of the moments in that game, watching that guy run. He is fast, and that pace, he had a moment where he had the missed touch when he was running pretty fast on the ball ahead, but you know, he slowed down and finished off his second goal with an incredible touch on that. So, but in general, throughout the game,
that wasn't intentional. It's a really good space if you wanted to cut it back on his right foot. It's a pretty good and deceptive way to do that, right? And it's a good way to try to get the defender to overcommit,
right?
Which is exactly what happened, right? Like Rosenberry overcommitted. All of a sudden, he was looking for his pants on Antony's left foot when Antony was pulling it back to his right foot and bending it far post. I don't know if it was intentional or not. If it was intentional, brilliant. If it wasn't, take your credit, young man.
Either way, it was gorgeous and it went in the back of the net. And I think that throughout that game, Antony showcased his speed, his positioning, and his skill in a way that made it look like he's got future star potential. Now it's one game. He could disappear the rest of the season and things could happen. But I don't think it's going to. I think that he showed something potentially special in that first game that, you know, it's all about harnessing it, right, and finding consistency and staying healthy. That's the case for the whole team. But, you know, in Antony's case, I think he's somebody that could factor in very well, particularly, you know, with Evander in there and Eric Williamson in there doing what they do, whether it's one or the other or both, you know, having those type of playmakers around. I thought that Paredes, you know, has had that ability in that game as well and has shown that ability. That's huge. And he's somebody that can benefit greatly from that. Also, when the number nine comes around, who that is, some people like ESPN Mexico are saying it's going to be Cabecita, Jonathan Rodriguez, or Tom Bogert, who sort of semi refuted that report based on his sourcing, which I think his sourcing is obviously strong within MLS.
No,
he said essentially that nothing is set in stone yet, and sort of implied that Rodriguez was not necessarily the backup option, but among the options.
I'll go ahead and say he's the backup option. Yeah. I mean, it's clear that deal for Cabecita is there if they want to make it. And it's clear that they're not making it yet, right? They might be very close. It sounds to me like they're trying to push things to come to a head with whatever other option they're exploring. But it's also clear that a deal for Cabecita is on the table if they choose to go in that direction. And frankly, I think, you know, the way they're approaching this with Cabecita and Mystery Striker makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, it's clear that Mystery Striker is probably somebody who would be a big swing, who would be a higher transfer fee, maybe not necessarily higher in salary. I think in terms of wages, Cabecita would probably, you know, demand a decent wage bill. But in terms of a transfer fee, you're not going to get the same for a 30-year-old guy than you are for a 23-year-old guy, right? And so, you know, it'd be lower end on the transfer fee. And, you know, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. Cabecita is a good option. Especially if, as Tom Bogert hinted today, doing the Cabecita deal would leave a little bit more in reserve to go after a young DP number whatever in the summer. If that's the case, then frankly, I think you can feel pretty good about that. I don't have much doubt that Cabecita would come in and do well in MLS. I mean, even just this year, in which he's sort of been in and out for America, in which he's been playing a few different positions for America, the guy's got like 9 goals and 2 assists in like 1,100 minutes or so. That'll play. Probably won't play for a long time, right? I mean, you know, you're looking at a guy who you would expect to be at peak production maybe for the next year or two, probably two, you would expect at peak production before the decline sets in. And so that's why the transfer fee would be lower. But look, I mean, that's going to play in MLS, which I think is not as deep of a league as Liga MX still. That'll play. And so I think there's reason, if it's Cabecita, to be, you know, at least guardedly excited. But he would not be sort of the, you know, biggest signing we've ever made kind of signing, even if I think the fit could make sense. And so, you know, I think we'll have to wait and see over the next few days. But it's clear that the Timbers have at least one good option, and they're still exploring whether there's maybe one option that they like better.
Yeah, one or two really good options, right? The idea of bringing in a younger player that's at a number that goes beyond or even well beyond what they paid for Evander. That's the sort of hype and the talk that's been happening from people like, you know, Phil Neville and Merritt Paulson and at times Ned Grabovoy, is the hope of being able to sort of achieve something like that with a DP number nine, maybe a young DP number nine, depending on who it is. But as a consolation prize, if it's inevitable that at the very least they get Cabecita, that's a great one, right? I think that's a starting level, you know, potentially.
I mean, what should be a top 10
leading goal scorer? Yeah, top 10 striker in MLS, and could lead the team comfortably in the goals department. Would I think fit very well with the personnel that the Timbers have right now. It is curious though that there has not been really other rumors as far as like who those bigger swing players are, and maybe that's a better thing than if they were to put the name out there and maybe that jeopardizes the deal. There's a lot of complications and factors in deals like this that can make things interesting, but it is interesting that they haven't floated other major
names.
What
I will say is I think, because sometimes deals, even big deals, stay really quiet like this until very late in the game. And you sort of just have to think about the interests involved. Very often when a team is sort of willing to part with a guy, sort of like, this guy's a little bit surplus to requirements, which I think is very much how America feels about Cabecita right now. It is a nice sort of flexible piece to be a part-time starter, part-time bench player, but they would absolutely move him for the right price. There is not as much incentive on the player side. There's not as much incentive on the club side to keep that deal quiet, right? On the other hand, if a club is selling a guy who is starting regularly, who is, you know, a big money signing, and who frankly fans might be a little bit upset if they know he's on the market, there's a lot more incentive both from the club and the player, who probably wants the deal because presumably there's a bag at the end of it. There's a lot more incentive for them to keep it quiet and to keep things a little bit more under wraps sort of as they go. So that's why once in a while you will see sort of these shock moves, right? Because it's like, oh, this guy's been starting for team down in Argentina or wherever, is absolutely crushing it. Could even be in Mexico, could be anywhere, is absolutely crushing it. And of course, Club X doesn't want to be like, hey, we're looking to sell our best player because we're going to get $12 million. They don't necessarily want that out in the reverse all the time. And so, you know, that's why these things can be quiet and can sort of go under the radar for a little bit. And, you know, it makes sense, frankly, if the Timbers are taking a big swing, it's not shocking that this would be that kind of a deal. That said, it's March 1st. And the Timbers are about to play their second game tomorrow. And so they need to get it done. But I think, frankly, that's why we're seeing the Cabecita stuff get a little bit warmer, because I think the messaging there, frankly, it wouldn't shock me if that's coming from the Timbers side. Even Timbers know people in Mexico. They can, you know, text messages get down to Mexico. It wouldn't shock me if that's coming from the Timbers side, because the point is sort of being, now it's time to put up or shut up. You know, this other deal that they're pursuing, maybe the club is hemming and hawing a little bit. They're going to say, hey, we, you know, I mean, they want to get the message out. Hey, we've got this deal with this guy who we think is good. ready to go. So time to put up or shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be part of the negotiations with others, right? It's like it takes two to tango is the old cliche, and that's true between two teams. But in the case of international football transfers, it's taking 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6, 7, 8 people to tango.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's a lot of different layers of it where you're sort of using the media's leverage. You're talking to agents, you're talking to players, you're talking to clubs, and they're sort of intertwined in this way behind the scenes that it's a very narrow thread. And so it's going to be an interesting few days and potentially weeks, depending on how this works out. Now, we've reached the 7 to 10 day mark that was originally stated by Ned Grabovoy in his opening press conference. I don't think that's going to happen. It's probably not going to happen today. It's probably not going to happen tomorrow.
I think the noise that we're hearing now strongly suggests that somebody is trying to push this over the line. And it might be Cabecitas camp. It might be Club America. It might be the Timbers. But it looks to me like somebody is trying to get this to that point. So frankly, I think we're now on alert, right? The go bag is packed. We're now on alert for this thing to be finished up. You know, not necessarily in Ned's 7 to 10 day timeline, but pretty close.
Yeah. And I guess one piece of news that did come across our desk, or I guess on my Twitter notifications with the Timbers just now, was that the U.S. Open Cup, officially the Timbers will be sending T2. They'll be sending T2 to the Open Cup. So, yeah, not a lot of people obviously happy about that because of what they believe U.S. Open Cup means and what it does mean to American soccer and the sort of weird, you know, rift that is now becoming a chasm between MLS and U.S. soccer in this regard. A lot of people don't think it's good for the sport for a lot of reasons that we could talk about on this podcast for literal hours, probably. But yeah, I mean that's official now. That'll be the T2 boys participating in that tournament.
It's too bad. It seems unnecessary. Look, there are and for lots of years have been lots of issues with U.S. Open Cup. And so, like, you know, that I'm not going to be out here saying the U.S. Open Cup is a perfect tournament that's been run perfectly because it hasn't been. But this feels very much like MLS largely taking its toys and going home. I, frankly, if that wasn't the message that MLS wanted to send, there is a very easy solution, right? Which is just open up rosters to bring in basically as many folks from your second team as you want and let teams play mixed teams, as frankly they have for the early rounds for the last several years, and let the teams make the assessment.
Yeah, they were kind of doing that anyway.
I mean, and let the teams make the assessment for how they wanted to balance their schedules. But it's clear that MLS does want to send a message that it is taking its toys and going home, or largely taking its toys and going home. And that's too bad because I think the U.S. Open Cup is cool. It is the most storied. It is the most traditional competition in the United States. I don't think you can crown yourself a national champion in the United States unless you win the U.S. Open Cup. And so it's really a shame that MLS, for all of its reasons, and you're right, we could talk about that for hours. It's really a shame that MLS, for its reasons, is choosing to take its toys and go home here. It doesn't feel good, doesn't smell good, doesn't taste good. And unfortunately, it means we're going to miss out here in Portland, at least this year, on sort of the first team competing in the U.S. Open Cup, which is, you know, USOC is crazy. It's wild, but it's also fun and historic and is worth the investment. I just wish we could convince the league of that.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of other people have said many times over, but it just reeks of this desire for monopolization of the American soccer product in a way that, frankly, you know, if you talk to people around the game who are aware of the cultural impacts of soccer in this country and how one can foster and foment positive growth of the sport and of fan culture so that it's not just this sort of, you know, empty corporate product. They believe in something like the U.S. Open Cup, and they want it to survive and thrive and be part of a system that they also believe should include things like relegation. But that's another conversation that is in some ways related. So it's messy. It sucks. I shouldn't say it's messy, because maybe that
messy with a
implies
Y.
other things. Yeah, messy with a Y. But it's, those sort of things do tend to come to the mind. So there's a lot there to unpack with US Open Cup, but yeah, T2 will be there. We'll touch briefly on really the only major sort of thorns related item this week, and that is the kits. The new kits that NWSL revealed across the league, total reset under Nike of the kits for the next couple of years. First kits of the Bethal era. Now, a quick caveat, the
completely designed kit design and the decision making administration.
Right. And there's still a transition ongoing with the Paulson regime and the Timbers organization having business employees that are in charge of this sort of thing. So that is where it stands in terms of the people that had more of a hand in this design. Reviews, reactions, they were kind of a mixed bag. I say they would probably lean a little negative, but that's social media. So, you know, how much can you really take away from that? There are good and bad aspects to the kits, but I wanted to know your sort of impression of the main one, which is sort of the angular thorn red yellow sort of thing, and then the very simple secondary one, which is like a gray blue, almost sort of, it almost looks like a keeper kit, but yeah.
Look, the mighty have fallen. This is the club of the really sort of cool, like Portland flag, red and black kit that they had, that was a little bit of homage to the Portland flag. What was that? That was probably 2018, 2019, maybe 2017, 2018. It is the, club of the absolutely legendary, Black Rose kit that was, I mean, to my eye, one of the best kits in American soccer over the course of the last decade or so. 2019, 2020-ish. How the mighty have fallen. The red one, frankly, looks a little bit stock and off rack to me. And the black one, blue one, unclear what color it is, just doesn't do much. Whereas San Diego's slaps hard, and boy, does San Diego slap hard. I saw a thing today that was just like they've been flying off the rack since announced. And frankly, don't blame San Diegans for opening up their pocketbooks for that. That is a kit that's worth opening up your pocketbook for. The Thorns, we'll do better in the future.
Yeah, it was a bit rough, in my opinion, honestly. Like, people had a lot of very strong opinions about the Ed Hardy tattoo kit, right?
And it didn't hit for me, but at least it was like a swing.
But I got it. Yeah. Like even if you didn't like that kit, you sort of understood the vibe they were going for. And then the original sort of classic black jersey they had with the thorns sort of wrapped around the torso area was objectively cool. And I think a good identifier with the red and black, very, you know, like strong and significant, like color identifying type of thing with the brand of the thorns, right? Green has never really been a major part of their uniforms, even though that's technically part of their actual palette. Logo. The red and black is the color palette. The red and black has been a standby, and that's the reds there. But there's really, I mean, there's not a lot of black, and the design itself. I don't know. It's. I wasn't
my,
a fan,
my favorite thing, personally. Frankly, about those red kits is the memes that have come out on social media of like 1990s McDonald's uniforms. Those are that's good. You spat upon social media a moment ago. Here I am praising social media, because that is the kind of stuff that social media gets us. It is funny. And it will now be in my mind, the McDonald's kit.
Yeah, I mean, despite being the window into the dark heart and the worst aspects of the human id, social media does produce funny memes.
Is exactly how you can describe social media. It is the worst of us. Yeah, it is also the best memes of us.
Yes, undoubtedly. So there was plenty of that to come out of the kit release, but yeah, there were some cool ones around the league. I like San Diego's too. But yeah, I just not a huge fan with the thorns. It feels off. It feels like a different team's colors in a way. So that's my general impression. But
if I'm the Bethals, and to be clear, I'm certainly not. But if I'm the Bethals, I'm calling my friends at Nike this week and saying, hey, can we set up a meeting to talk about, you know, how we're gonna do this going forward? Because this doesn't scream the ambition that the Bethals have screamed since they've showed up. And so I hope they're, you know, doing that outreach.
Yeah, and there's not to say that there won't be, you know, another alternate kit added to the mix as the season goes on, or even a overall change into next year. I think it's a 2-year situation with these kits, but who's to say? We'll talk more on kits in the coming weeks and days. Kits is the theme of the week, apparently, between the Timbers changing the kit sponsor and the Thorns getting some new ones, new kits of their own. So that'll wrap it for us then here on Soccer Made in Portland with a nice bow. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Made in PDX, at Chris Reifer, at Ryan T. Clark. Subscribe to us on the Oregonian Sports Podcast Network and on Soccer Made in Portland, on any of your podcast apps. You can find us on either channel. Oregonian Sports Podcast feed obviously can give you the range of different pods that we have between, you know, Beaver Banter, Ducks Confidential, which I am also a co-host of with James Crepia, and yeah, the pod man over here. I tried pod father last week. Chris didn't like it that much. That's okay. But yeah, leave us a review if you want, and we will catch you next week after the Timbers take on DC United this Saturday.